you so much for having me here. My name is Dawn Reese. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of The Wooden Floor. The Wooden Floor is a creative youth development organization in Santa Ana. We have two locations and we serve 475 children after school through the power of dance that we combine with academics, college career readiness, and social services. And since 2005, 100% of our students have graduated and gone on to higher education. And so we're very proud of that. And also, I have had the privilege and honor to be here for 14 years. So I've led our strategic vision, our first one, and now our second one, really making a difference in the lives of children all over Orange County.
So thank you, Dawn. It's good to see you. It's good to have you here. For those that are watching and listening today, I've known Dawn for quite a few years. We have a lot of mutual friends, and now we even have opportunities to serve together, at least in one board with the Passkeys Foundation. And it seems like we're in a lot of rooms together at a lot of nonprofit events. So it's a privilege for me to get a chance to interview you on the From the Heart podcast, which, by the way, is presented by the First Bank Center for Family-Owned Businesses. So you threw a statistic out there and you glossed over it. You didn't gloss over it. I know you well enough, but others may have missed it. Say that 100% statistic again, and let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure. Since 2005, 100% of our students have enrolled in higher education. And that is about over 50% of their socioeconomic peers across the nation. Today, we also have 120 alumni in college and universities around the country. And our graduation rate from college is very high. Between 52 and 54% pre-pandemic have graduated from college with a bachelor's. And so we believe that our students are with us from third grade all the way through 12th grade. And it's preparing them to access higher education. And hopefully they've developed those life skills that they can do to achieve their dreams for what they want to do in their life beyond the wooden floor.
Talk about who, that's amazing to me. That stat gets me right between the eyes and in the heart, literally every single time I hear you share it. Talk about who your students are. For those that are interested in learning more about the Wooden Floor, where are you physically located? How do they, we're going to talk at the end about how people reach you and so forth, but I think we need to lead with the Wooden Floor because that's so impressive. Any after-school program, I've been a part of many and I've seen many throughout Orange County and around the country, but none that I know of boast those kind of numbers that you have. So where are you located? Who are your students? And how might people, you know, parents in particular, have their children learn more about you and the Wooden Floor?
Sure. So our students are some of the students that are in poverty. So our children, we're a creative youth development organization. We're not a dance studio. And so our families could not afford to be in a organization like ourselves if they had to pay any sort of tuition or anything like that. But we serve 15 cities because we believe our students are change agents. So they come from 15 cities to our two locations here in Santa Ana. So we have a location, 21,000 square foot location, our main campus. And then through an affordable housing developer, they created another location for us inside of their affordable housing community, where we not only have our own programming, we also serve the 70 residents within the affordable housing community. So if they need tutoring or other parenting workshops or things like that, we're able to support the family as well. So that was a great model for us because we could grow without absorbing any of those hard costs of construction costs. And also they provide free rent to the Wooden Floor. And so that's a great model for us that because it's in Santa Ana, we were able to go from 375 children to 475 children after school.
Wow, that's amazing. What kind of comments do you get from the kids at school? I mean, I've been there for some of your graduations, at least two, and one of which we'll talk about momentarily, which was sort of the impetus for the From the Heart podcast. So this podcast doesn't exist really without Dawn Reese because the idea came to me and through other people at an event you hosted. But when you, and I've talked to some of your graduates at your graduations and others, but what are some of the comments and, you know, not direct quotes, but feedback you get from the students that are part of the Wooden Floor?
Well, one of the highest compliments that they give to the organization is they call us their second home. Mm. And so for us, as you know, of any home, you want it to be warm and welcoming, supportive, and a platform for success, hopefully, in your life. And, you know, because they have come from struggles in their own community and maybe their neighborhoods or their schools or where they're coming from, for us, we really try to lift all of the children and their parents in order to have a dream for themselves. And our long-term goals are to break the cycle of poverty through generational change, but we want to make sure that we don't have the students get too far ahead of their parents. What we do is we make sure that because most of them are first gen, their parents haven't been to college. So for us, it's really important that we set that really big, bold vision for the whole family. So the class this year is the class of, there will be class of 3033, our next audition class. So in October, we tell our new students when they join us this fall that they will be the class of 3033. And that's when they're graduating high school and going to college. And we believe higher education is a platform for success. We do support children to maybe go into a certificate program or a community college, but we believe ultimately that the highest goal that they can achieve is hopefully a four-year degree for themselves, because that really will help them break the cycle of poverty. We believe in entrepreneurs and people that can do it on their own, but they're already struggling. And so for them, it's really a life-changing opportunity for them to go to college.
I know you're heavily involved in a lot of different nonprofits because, you know, I see you everywhere. And I wonder how people like you can do it. I mean, there's a couple of people in my life that seem to be everywhere. You, Charles Antis, and Tam Nguyen, three of my favorite Orange County leaders and just three of my closest friends and greatest people that I know. How does your involvement in other organizations like Passkeys and like, you know, fill in the blank here, how does that complement and support what you do at the Wooden Floor? How have you seen the Wooden Floor grow from your involvement in the community, I guess, is really my question.
Well, you know, I'm a CEO that I like to be out and a leader in the community. I believe there's a couple of reasons. One, meeting new people to learn about the mission of the Wooden Floor, find ways that they can get involved or support us in the corporate community. We have a lot of corporate supporters in Santa Ana and Orange County. Yeah, especially Orange County. And I think it's important for me to also be there as a secondary reason is to share about the issues that I'm seeing here on the ground floor every day. And I know people say that to me all the time, like, how are you in all these places? But I have a great team. You know, I have a great team some of them have been with me 22, 23, 14 years. I've been at the Wooden Floor. Older than, you know, longer than me, even 15. Yeah. And so that's part of our model and our culture, I should say, probably better than that, is that we really honor long-term retention here. And because we make that long-term commitment to the children. So it's really important for us, especially on our full-time staff, to make sure that we have long-term retention, which is right now it's about 8.5 years is the average. And so, you know, in the nonprofit sector, sometimes there are some turnover. Mm-hmm. And for us, we just want to make sure that we can be as consistent for our students, but also our supporters, you know, so it's also important that they know that I'm here and that they're able to call me or Tiana. And it's always the same person, you know, that they can have an idea on something. And so when I'm in the community, it's really for me also to be a connector. Third is really a connector. I was just at an event yesterday and I heard something and it doesn't have to be related to the Wooden Floor, but when I hear somebody stuck, I like to unstick them by connecting them to someone. So I did that. I wrote to the person. I said, hi, you know, you said this during your speech. I think I know two people I can connect you to, and who knows what happens, but at least I connected them together. And so it's kind of the combination of, I believe as a CEO for myself, and we're also, you know, to add is that the Wooden Floor is privately funded. Some nonprofits are government funded or maybe heavy grant funded in some places, but for the Wooden Floor, we're funded by individuals, family foundations, corporate supporters, as well as foundations. And so for me, it's just meeting new people and spreading the word of the good work that we're doing here.
I love that. You reminded me as you were talking of the most influential man in my life, who you've met, my dad, who passed a couple of years ago, but he used to always say,
your dad.
Yeah, he loved you. He loved your story and hearing about you and meeting you at the, I think at the influencers event a couple of years ago.
But yeah.
he always said, if you're stuck, connect to someone new and then serve them.
Yes.
And it sounds like that's what you're saying as well. If you're out there, you're not just connecting people, you're finding ways to bless their lives and make their lives better today than it was right. yesterday because they met you.
And if I never hear what happens after that, I'm okay. But yeah. every once in a while, I get kind of tickled sometimes when I hear that someone has gone on to do all kinds of great things because of just a simple opportunity to provide that impetus, you know, I don't want to say impetus, maybe catalyst for them to have a new idea or a new connection that they take, and it even becomes bigger, you know. So,
wow, you just gave me a profound aha, and I don't care if anybody's listening to this or not. This is just Ed and Don talking for a minute. Don and I are in a storytelling class with Jay Golden, who's been a previous guest on here, with Eric Goodman, who's been a previous guest, and Charles Antis, who's a previous guest, and so forth. But the words, like when I was interviewing Charles on this several years ago, not in the script, I said, you know, Charles, I think the word I keep hearing you not say about you, but that defines you, as protector. And I look at you, Don, and I think of this sort of something that I long for as well, as a door opener. And, you know, if we can be perceived as door openers, whether it's someone who's stuck and we open a door to something new for them, or we open a door to a new relationship, or we open a door of in their own mind that maybe they were closed-minded yes. about something.
New idea on yeah, something.
So I think I might start calling myself Ed Hart Door Opener. I don't know. That's my right. that's my self-defined title right now. I'll change it in a week. But right now, it's one of those where when you hear it, it's like, ooh, I really like how that sounds. But right. I see that with you as well. You open doors for folks. And it's called the wooden floor, and then just move up the floor to the door, and you're opening up the right. door. Now I'm getting a little bit out there with my analogy, but... Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, our tagline is from here, you can step anywhere, you know, and mm-hmm. so it's really about that world of possibilities. So we're possibility thinkers too. And so we provide that not only for the children we serve and their families, but also ourselves here at the Wooden Floor and our supporters and people that come into contact with our mission. We want them to have possibility thinking, you know, that like, you know, our new concert name this year for our 40th anniversary concert is limitless. And that's come out of our ability to, we thought maybe we needed to have some limitless to what, but we felt like limitless is what it is. It's
why
open.
Limit the title, right?
It's idea, yeah. It's innovative. Yeah. It's whatever you want it to be, you yeah. know?
I love that. So I teed it up earlier for those that are watching and listening. You probably remember the year, Don, and I don't, but some pre-COVID 2017, 18-ish time.
I want to say 2017. I think.
Yeah, you were so you do this graduation every year, and we'll have to talk about that in a minute. You'd okay. invited Tam and Lynn from Advanced Beauty College to be the speakers, if you will. And as luck would have it, I was invited to be the interviewer on stage for this particular event,
yep.
which was a fantastic event. And I want to talk about that more. But for me, selfishly and personally, it was one of those moments for me, or hours or what have you, for me, where I thought, wow, I really like interviewing people. And I'd done that before, and I've done it in other events and so forth. But part of it was your organization and you and your people and the graduates. A big part was my relationship with Tam and Lynn.
Yes.
Someone came up to me that day and said, hey, have you ever thought about having a podcast? And it never even occurred to me. So over the next couple of years, I thought about it, listened to a lot of podcasts, thought, yeah, this will be fun to do someday. And then there's more to the story that goes out a little bit. But because of that event, I have a podcast. I really do. I go back to the root of, you know, I was interviewing Lynn and Tam, and getting that opportunity to just ask questions and have them share their heart with people, that led me to the idea of a blog called From the Heart, which led to a podcast yes. called From the Heart. So thank you for creating that.
Well, so. And that was the first time we had changed our format. We normally had it as a single executive sharing their story. And Tam said, you know, I'd love if I could have my sister, Lynn, who's a yeah. partner in our organization, be with me. I said, I love that. I met Lynn also through the Center for Leadership at Cal State Fullerton, mm-hmm. which I'm on as well.
Yeah.
And then they said that they knew you, and we didn't know each other at the time. And right. I said, well, you know, they know him. Then
yeah.
it'll be great. Right? And yeah, we had right. a call, and you know, that's how it happened. And you know, it kind of goes back to what I just said, is, you know, we love that it'd be a catalyst like that, right? For even yourself, you were inspired by that event. People in the room, someone came up to you. What if you weren't in the room? Right.
Yeah,
and exactly. So, you know, I always say kind of there's serendipity in life, you know, and I see that, you know, that you did such a great job, and then people heard you speak. They're like, wow, we want to hear more. You know, you ask great questions.
That wasn't my point, but thank you for that. But no, my point was
you ask great questions, you know,
I enjoy talking with people. So you've got a laundry list of awards that you've won, and I'm not going to have you go on and on about them, but a few that jump out at me, and I'm looking down at my notes. I guess the first one that jumps out at me is the Founders Award in 2018 at Passkeys, because I was lucky enough, along with Tam, in 2019. No, it wasn't 19. It was
during COVID.
21. It was during COVID. We did it outside on a freezing cold night. Yeah, 21. Talk about how you got involved with. Yeah, how'd you get involved with Passkeys? So for those that don't know, Passkeys, David Elliott, who heads up the Santa Ana Chamber, launched a program or a organization called the Institute for Community Impact, which is part of Passkeys. Don's our board chair, and I recently have been lucky enough to be on that board. How did you get involved with Passkeys, your relationship with Dave, and so forth? Dave's an upcoming podcast guest as well. He just doesn't know.
Oh, great.
It's not scheduled yet, and he doesn't know it yet, but it's coming. So yeah, Dave, well, you're coming.
Yes. Well, it's all roads lead through Dave.
Absolutely.
I met Dave probably in 2014, 15, we met through LinkedIn. And awesome. He, you know how this post come up, do you know Dave Elliott, Santa Ana Chamber? And I said, well, no, I don't. So I put a link to him, and we linked together. And he came over and met, you know, where we've been a longtime member of the chamber. He was new in his role as president at the time. And so he came over to meet me and learn about the wooden floor. He was just blown away that he'd been in Santa Ana for years and never had learned like he had about the wooden floor at the time. And, you know, Dave is an influencer for good. And slowly he asked me to join him in different initiatives. And one was when I've told this story, is he had this vision for the Institute for Community Impact that to start another nonprofit. And he met with several of us, and I say at the Corner Bakery by South Coast Plaza, mm-hmm. yep. just to throw this idea around. What were our thoughts on it? Do we think there was merit? And I said, absolutely. I think this is exactly what we need in our community. 7 pillars of focus areas within the county: arts and culture, faith, business, education, healthcare, government. I always love the last one.
Yeah, I think it's I'm glad social you're naming services. Them off, I wouldn't get to say
social services. And, you know, he just has such a warm heart and he's a great person. And then he told me that he was working with Russ Williams, who I knew at the time had been doing the Ethical Edge series, a leadership summit with your Cal State Long Beach at the time. And I had always heard of Russ's name, but Russ had offered to Dave to put the Institute under the Passkeys Foundation. So what happened was I just started being an advisor to Dave with the Institute, was on the advisory board. And then when Russ wanted to retire, Dave then had an opportunity to build the board. And so I think we started the board with 5 people, and I think now it's at 13 yeah. in two or three years. And so I know you're now on it. And but we're always keeping the same focus about the 7 pillars, what we're trying to create in the community. And, you know, the events we do through the breakfast event, as well as the Institute Awards event, which is really becoming a county event of shining the light on good, influencers for good. There's just... Yeah. no better title for it because the people that are recognized are, you know, they're business leaders or education leaders, but at the heart of what they do, it's truly about bringing more good into the community, shining the light on great people, great organizations doing good work.
Yeah. And I very proudly over my shoulder, if you're watching, can see a trophy over my bookshelf there. And that's the trophy
yes,
I got.
Yes, I have mine too.
I'm proud of it, not because it's a trophy and not because, I mean, that night was so great for me because my wife was there. My dad was there. My daughter was there. Many friends were at the table with us as well. One of the last events my dad attended. I mean, that was November of 21 and a month and a half he passed away. So, you know, it was great to be able to.
I can close my eyes and I can see it because I presented you your award, and I can look down at my eyes and I remember seeing him with he had his blanket on and his Dodger baseball hat.
Yeah, he's in it. My dad's in a suit with a tie with a blanket wrapped around him in his wheelchair. My wife on one side, my daughter on the other, keeping him warm, keeping each other warm. That was an amazing.
And then
night.
We got to go to dinner after with Tam and Lynn, that was just perfect. And Meg McComb, I've got to know her too now over the years. And you know, that's the best when you bring great people together, you know, and their shared interests, their shared meaning, what we want to do in the community. We have a heart, right, for making a difference in the community in our different vantage points, because we all come, you know, some come from philanthropy, some come from doing the work, some people come because they have a cause that they want to support and shine the light on, like our breakfast series events. Really shine the light on other nonprofits. And so that's where I also focus my attention is, even though I am at the wooden floor, I try to shine the light on other nonprofits in the community that I meet, great leaders, great missions, great boards that maybe they're just a little smaller and they need someone to see what they're doing, or they could be a large nonprofit. And maybe someone has no idea that their mission is changed and grown and expanded in a new program area. And so we try to have a complement of both a larger nonprofit and then emerging nonprofit or a mid-sized nonprofit, where people get a sense of how they can help that nonprofit with ideas to support their strategic impact question at the breakfast. So I think I was the first also, Dave, I was the first person to pitch, we call them pitches, where we talk about our strategic impact question. And at the time, ours was, how do we grow but keep our high performing culture intact? I talked to other CEOs who in the for-profit sector as well. And through growth, your culture can start to fray. And for me, that was really important. I didn't want that to happen when we opened a second location. And so I was the first one out of the block. And I think we're at 50, we're close to 50, I think, nonprofits today that have had a pitch their strategic impact question to the group to get feedback.
Yeah, I was lucky enough last week to be with Tracy over at the Child Creativity Lab, and a good group of us that met in person, actually. We met in person and talked about their impact and how they can have a greater impact. So, yeah, it's a great work that the Paskeys, the Institute for Community Impact, are doing. And I've had the opportunity to be not only on that board recently, but also to attend a few of the breakfasts and really see the impact. I mean, it's appropriately named the Institute for Community Impact. That's exactly what it's focused on.
And it's always surprising that in an hour and a half follow-up session that we get to do with that nonprofit and any like-minded people that want to continue the conversation from that original breakfast comes together for only an hour and a half. And I'm always so surprised that in an hour and a half of focused energy, focused attention, the nonprofit can come out with so many ideas that they can take and actualize on. And I know for myself, some of the things that I talked about in 2015 when we started, we're still talking about today. Our culture task force we have, and said we have culture buddies when we add new team members. This all came from that meeting we had in 2015 and how we train and onboard our team, making sure they understand that even though the second location is only a mile away, they're part of the main location. Like we're all one organization. And that came out of the feedback we got from other leaders at the table in 2015.
That's awesome. That's a telltale sign that the impact and the work is working, that, you know, if you're still talking about it now, still implementing some of the things from years ago. So let's go back. Let's take me back to your childhood, Dawn. Now, I want to find out who, because you're making such an impact, and there's that word again, on so many people in our communities around us, not just in Santa Ana and Orange County, but beyond. Talk to me about some of those folks early on in your life, before you were Dawn Rees, community leader and award winner and nonprofit, you know, guru and leader and mentor. Who taught you, who mentored you, and where did those early leadership lessons come from in your life?
Well, I think, so of course, my parents. I'm very fortunate and privileged. I had wonderful parents who were amazing role models, but also leaders in the community of volunteerism and other things that they did. My dad and mom owned businesses, and my dad was a car dealer. Still is. Well, then he's a car dealer. Now he's retired. Nice. But And my mom was that early working professional, you know, in the 1970s that, you know, she was really a trailblazer. My sister and I say my mom passed in 2010. But, you know, that was the formative part of like, you can have a family, you can work, you can make a difference in your life. But you also always family has always been a high priority with myself and my family, family first and everything. And the staff know here at the Wooden Floor, you know, family first, you know, something's coming up with work, just let me know and we'll make it happen. We'll get coverage for you, yeah. But always family is a priority, but at the same side, you see how hard it worked too. And so I've learned to do both through my family, but my formative work, mentor was my first boss. I worked for him for 10 years. His name is Randall. He was a friend of mine's dad I met through the sorority, and it just happened that I was going to be a teacher and a principal coming out of college, and that was my game plan. I knew I was a teacher's aide in college. I knew that was the plan. And then during the summer after I graduated, I worked for Randall's wife for a couple months, and he walked by one day and he said, you know, I think I met him through my friend, so it wasn't like I didn't know him. He walked by one day, he's like, I'm thinking about starting a management consulting firm for CEO coaching. And I said, yeah.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, would you want to work for me? I go, well, I'm working for Judy at the time. And he said, no, I already talked to her. And she said, if you wanted, I said, well, I plan to go back and become a teacher and a principal. And he said, well, you can do that. You can go to school at night. I'll help you out, you know, but it turned out I actually ended up staying with him for 10 years and building my career. Started out, I'm very proud to say, I started out as administrative assistant, and I grew to director of operations. We grew the firm. We moved to our own offices. We worked in the high tech space. And so my boss at the time, I say time because he passed about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. But he always would say to me, like, you're a smart girl, you'll figure it out. You know, like, yeah. I was a psychology major coming out of college. I want to be a teacher and a principal. So the first thing when I looked at him and I said, well, what's a CEO?
Yeah, there you go. Asking the right questions. Cool.
And he looked at me, he's like, oh, we have a long way to go. Because my parents were entrepreneurs. My dad was probably called president of his dealership. I don't know what he was, just Dan. I knew him as Dan. I worked for him, and I'd never heard titles like that. You know, I wasn't a business major. And so, but because of that, he always just was always mentoring and helping me grow. At the end, I was doing business development. I self-taught myself accounting. I was doing business valuations for tech companies. I was doing advertising plans. I was doing brand design. I was doing HR audits. You know, I just had this ability to grow and morph over time. And I really say I have a pseudo MBA through him. But I have, the point of all that was, on my credenza over here, the first book he gave me was Ken Blanchard's book, The One Minute Manager.
There you go. Got it on my shoulder.
And I have it sitting on my desk with the picture of Randall from that time. And I happily wrote to Ken because I saw that you were connected with him. Ken and I have now connected, and I told him that about this book. And I'm so happy to be able to see him at the summit you have coming up because, you know, the 1 minute manager, that was how my boss really believed in managing and leading others, you know, and that was such a, so now I give that book away to all of my new managers, anyone who's in my mentors. I mentor at Cal State Long Beach. Any of my students that I work with that are getting into that first career, I give them still to this day, that 1 minute manager book, because it made such a profound difference in my life.
Yeah. Same with me. I read it in the early 80s when I was a freshman in college, and, Ken made an impact on me back then. And then when we were looking for a Hall of Fame speaker at Fullerton several years ago, my buddy Dan Vandervliet out at Cornell said, well, have you thought about Ken Blanchard? I'm sure. Right. Might as well see if I can get, you know, Obama to come speak or whatever. But so he put me in touch with Ken, and as you know, he's become a mentor and a friend. He was guest number one on the From the Heart podcast.
Yes, I know.
And then so when we planned this summit that we have coming up in April, through First Bank, first person I thought of after we scheduled this was you, because I know what an impact he's had on you. And when, you know, so yeah, I'm glad that you're going to get a chance to be there and hopefully bring some folks as well.
Yeah,
for those that are watching this, yeah, we're doing a symposium. This will air before, but it'll also run after. But April 20th, 23, we're doing a servant leadership event with Dr. Ken Blanchard and Roger Koch, former CFO of In-N-Out Burger, Estan Lanyun, who's on the board with Ken at the Ken Blanchard Companies, and then Shelley Seifert, our CEO, will be moderating and be an evening at the Lion Air Museum talking about servant leadership and what it means to serve our people and to open doors for people like we were talking about earlier.
I was about to say that is kind of my closure to Randall is that, you know, that's what I learned about is servant leadership within the company as a CEO himself, but also in our community. And so he really believed that it was part of our corporate values to give back to the community. And so he offered me opportunities when I was only in my early 20s to, you know, serve in our community of Torrance. I was able to be on a Torrance Symphony board. I was on a board of a South Asian's Health Center, which is a mental health organization at the time, and I'm very involved in our chamber in Torrance. And, you know, those are formative times for me that I talk about is that I didn't know that that would lead me to where I am today, mm-hmm. you know, and I tell young people today is take advantage of opportunities. Don't stay in your house. Don't get out there and meet new people when you're young, because you don't know those formative experiences, how they lead down the way. I never knew I'd be at a wooden floor, you know, at that time, but those are formative building blocks in my life of, you know, the corporate side of Randall, the tech community, the visioning, the strategic vision work that I learned there. It has helped me here at the wooden floor, but the community work that I did there really is a cornerstone of my career that I always wonder, you know, where would I be today? You know, it was a boutique management consulting firm, but had profound impact into tech companies because of that CEO coaching philosophy that Randall had. And I actually do it today without, I'm not getting paid for it, but I do CEO coaching to other nonprofit CEOs, leaders. And also actually I've recently been doing some for-profit CEOs too around that coaching side of helping them think through those strategic business issues or life issues that they're facing the organization. So I'm very grateful for formative time in my life.
I love that. I've got a few people in my life that I go way back. I'm 58 years old and I look back at people that I've worked for back 35 years ago that they didn't know then and probably still don't know today the impact that they've made on me. And I look at those turning points in my life. And for me, there was and I'm leading up with you, I don't know the answer to this for you, but for me, I was 33 years old and there was a tragic situation that happened at my workplace where I was the manager, and I won't go into the detail here, but it was for a parent about the worst thing you can imagine could happen with one of your children. Mm-hmm. Use your imagination there. But as the leader and the supervisor in that department, I learned a lot about myself that day that I can go back to lessons that I learned about me that day that prepared me for the rest of what I've done in my career. And I haven't always been in a leadership role, and I haven't always, you know, thankfully, knock on wood, haven't had any kind of experience remotely close to that since, and hopefully won't, but it did teach me some things. Was there any kind of an experience, good or bad, challenging or exciting, or a turning point in your career where you look back at that moment and think, because of that taking place, and it might not have been beautiful at the time, or maybe it was, that you look back on and say, wow, I am who I am today, largely because of that event or that time frame?
I would say, I think I shared a little bit with Jay and our CEO pod, is I was a CFO prior to CEO, and I was the managing director and CFO of Opera Pacific. It was a top 15 largest opera companies in the United States. It was a great main stage, similar to LA Opera. A lot of our operas would be at that same level. We'd perform at the Segerstrom Center. And in 2008, opera had always was having a hard time, but they wanted to change their business model and become a summer festival. And we knew what that would take. We'd have to totally turn the ship. We'd have to, you know, go dark for a couple of years. We were making kind of what that plan would look like. But unfortunately, when they came to me, I said, well, the number one issue you have is that you don't have cash to make such a big turn, right? To make such a big turn. It was going to be about a $12 million turn in order to make that happen. And I said, you know, that's the biggest issue, because what I learned from Randall, hence, you know, years ago, is cash is king. Yep. And he taught me, because he started a technology company at the same time he took a product. He took a company public, a technology company public, at the same time he ramped up a new product. And what happened is he stalled out on both because he ran out of cash. And so it was a valuable lesson he then would tell his other CEOs as a coaching process. But that always has stuck with me my whole career. And so that was the first thing I said out of the block. And of course, you know how every, you know, people make decisions, boards make decisions, CEOs make decisions. So I was watching it as a number two. And of course, the decision then was, well, we ran out of money. We need to take the organization to bankruptcy. We need to close the nonprofit. So I had the difficult task. I had to lay off our CEO. Wow. I had to lay off our entire organization. I had to close down about probably about 25,000 square feet of storage of sets, props, and everything else. And but at the same time, I had just started in the nonprofit sector, getting to know a lot of people outside of Opera Pacific and knowing the nonprofit community. And I felt that I'm going to be okay. I didn't know what the next step was when that tumult was starting to happen, but I stayed calm. And what I did also is a lesson I learned is I connected myself to all the great people of the opera who loved the opera, who were great community leaders, who could be there to support me. And I was the last employee that was left to take it into bankruptcy. So the biggest lessons I took out of that is ask for help when you need it. That was, you know, I was always kind of like self-sufficient. I'm not going to ask for a lot of people. And I still do today. If I need help, or I need an idea, or I need someone to help me on something I'm working on. Because one of the saddest parts was during the closure of Opera Pacific, so many people would say, I wish I would have known. I could have helped. I could have introduced. And so what happens is sometimes people don't bring other people into the solution of the challenge that they're having, life or work, right? And the second was I saw, I've been a leader since I was 20 when I was president of my sorority. And so I've always been a leader within, but I chose to be a number two at the time because of my son being young. And I wanted to make sure that even though I was working a lot at the time, I wanted to make sure that I knew how I would be as a CEO, like I am today, like always out, always meeting people, always making things happen. But what I saw in leadership, and sadly, the CEO just passed recently, was, you know, how I wanted to be a servant leader, how I wanted to walk the halls of my organization, how I wanted to uplift others, how I wanted to be a different type of leader, and to make a difference in the lives of the people. So I said to myself, if I ever was given that opportunity, I would make sure that I would be a servant leader. And just like Randall was, you know, and if I had that opportunity. And so that's how, when I came to the wooden floor, all the challenges we have had through growth and scaling and other things we've had, I've always just kept that servant leader attitude in everything we had, because I don't think there's a higher privilege we have to do than to work with others and in service for, which is our teams normally. Yeah. And near at the wooden floor, it's also families and students, you know, sure, that I get to work with every day. So I serve in many ways. And I also, like you said, I'm on other boards. I serve in that way and serve my community. So it really was a pivotal time for me to reflect of how I wanted to live my path as a leader and take what I knew as my great leadership strengths. Cause I feel I am you know, I do that proudly. I work on that. I hone it. I'm going to your conference, you know, I am always reading on best practices, making sure that I'm constantly working at that, I don't take leadership lightly because it's such an honor to work with others.
How much of success do you, and I'm leading up to what you just talked about and then going back to your 100% statistic for your graduates, your philosophy, how much, what percentage I say would you put on successful people that they're born just with tendencies or they learn? I know it's both, but I mean, in your life, from what you've seen, I want to go back to that 100%. Do you just recruit students that are already kind of on a good path and you just nudge them along? Or what is it about what you do at Wooden Four that pushes maybe these kids that might not go to college to now going at 100% rate and a 50 to 52% graduation rate? What's the process there for you as far as finding these talented students, getting them to that level? Is it something they're naturally just born with, or what's the value add, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I think the value add is hope. You know, it's when you can provide someone that may, even young, who feel a little hopeless, or maybe they don't know what they don't know. It's not like I always say with the parents, it's not a lack of love, it's a lack of knowledge. Once we give the parents a little knowledge on how to navigate the academic pathway for their children, they're like running down the road. Similarly with the children, as we provide hope to the children that they can achieve anything they want to achieve, we say that to them in all parts of the organization, through tutoring, through our academic advising, through their dance classes. It's such a positive atmosphere for each child. And academically, the children start with us. We don't know their grades when they audition each year in October. We have a pre-pandemic, we had about 300 students line up for only about 70 spots outside. And some would line up the night before and sleep on the ground. Wow. At 10 o'clock at night, because their parents and the children knew that was a life-changing moment, more so probably for the parents than the children. They probably thought it was just, why is my mom and dad wanting to do this? But when they, kind of to your original, what do they say? They children know, if they don't even acknowledge it, they know that this place is a life-changing opportunity. The way we run the organization, our guiding principles, our strategies, our warmth and caring for our families and students. And, you know, I always say, if you see in my writing, is it's our community. We're just coming at it from these different places, but we're all in this together. We're all in this together. And I just believe that it's, if you said, is it innate or learned? I think it's a combination. I think it's a fire inside each child and each family that maybe no one has sparked for them. So one of the things we do for our auditionees that, you know, some, you know, if we have to sadly not admit at least 80% of those who line up, is we make sure they know that they tried something new that day. They went out of their way. They were part of our organization for an hour and a half or 3 hours, how long it took them to go through the line. And we just want them to feel very proud of themselves. And then also we tell them is, we hope that you keep this vision for yourself to go to college, you know, because that we might be the only one who will ever say that to that child. Yeah. And we want to make sure that every child and every family member hears that message. And one of my favorite things too is that we call every family who lined up. It's not like show up somewhere, and we call each family and we say, make sure you tell your child they did a great job, that they showed up for the Wooden Floor. Because we hope, again, that in that one and a half hours or 3 hours they were at the Wooden Floor, that they had a bit of hope in their heart.
I love that. That's so great. Yeah, when I've been to your graduations and sat with students that graduated and had conversations with them, the underlying theme that I hear from them is, I don't know where I would be without this experience. And I just think that's fantastic. What's your goals for the organization going forward that, you know, we all talk, and you talked about that earning the MBA through your work experience. And, you know, we all have these big, hairy, audacious goals that we learned in graduate school. If you had any, you know, one or two big, hairy, audacious goals for the Wooden Floor, or personally, or both, what would those be?
Well, you know, for the wooden floor, we have a strategic vision and a strategic plan. So we build a 10-year strategic vision, 2131 right now we're in currently. It's to drive social innovation, grow impact, and uplift our community. So it has three pillars to it. It's not sequential. It happens all the time. Yeah. And then we use strategic planning as chapters in a book. So we're in the first chapter, first phase, someone would say maybe, nice. But we call it a chapter. And it's chapter one, which is 2021 to 23. And that's really around the pandemic. You know, we created it during the pandemic, is we wanted to strengthen our community, leading with agility. And making sure that we're focusing on the present with a vision to the future. So we created two locations pre-pandemic. We've thought about potentially a third location. We've actually identified one, but we're not sure it's the right time right now. We're just keeping an eye on it. Or something else in another city we're also open to if it made sense financially. But also we're scaling our model nationally. Our first licensed partner was in Washington, D.C., someone just reached out from Hawaii before nice. I got on this podcast. Hmm. We've had someone from Utah recently, but because of the pandemic, we've just been really focused on ourselves, sure. like put your own air mask on first, right? Exactly. Making sure we're doing great, which we have been, navigating all the challenges. But our next one is, you know, pre-pandemic, because our model is so self-contained to the 475 children, and we have a community outreach program that sees about 3,000 students each fall, and that's a feeder into our addition. So it has a community engagement purpose, but it also has a purpose towards our additions. So we, at the end of it, we pass out flyers, but we get so many great remarks from the teachers that say, wow, I have a student that came into class the beginning of September, hasn't said a word, but after taking your Dance Free Weeks program, they are speaking, they're raising their hand, they're engaged in the class, they're joyful. And so we're like, and this is pre-pandemic, and we're like, wow, we just have so much going on with scaling both locally and nationally. But during the pandemic, with social emotional wellness of children really taking that real focus area with remote learning and all of that, our dance programming, that's the community engagement programming, is actually centered on social emotional wellness, right? And bringing, we call it the dose effect, bringing a little wooden floor out into the world. Yeah. And so we now are starting to explore that with a school district. We have two proposals out to do an after school program just with our dance component, because the school has then the academic components and the social emotional component. So that's how our whole model works together. And so if we see a child struggling in their dance class, then we can navigate it to the school site and the school counselors and those that are there to support the child in that 12-week environment. And so because our teachers already are trained to hear when children move, sometimes other emotions pop up. Something's going on at home. They're sad. They're tired. They're hungry. And when we hear about it, we can then connect with the school site and make sure those children are seen. So right now we've seen over 100,000 young people since our founding, but wow. we could see maybe 5,000 to 10,000 children or more a year through this scalable model, also focusing on our year-round program, the 10-year program. But the other one could have a dose effect that makes even a bigger difference to more children, especially this tie into social emotional wellness.
Yeah, you're having that opportunity to work with the local schools and partner in the education and the wellness of these kids. And I think that's outstanding. As you're looking for, board members or volunteers, or, you know, obviously beyond just looking for more students to serve and their families, what are you looking for? What's the gap between what you currently have now and what you'd like to get to? If maybe there's somebody listening today that wants to get involved, what skill set or background are you looking for? And just those that can step in and just help out, and how can they reach you to get involved?
Great. So the wooden floor, you know, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary this
Congratulations.
Year.
Congratulations. That's great.
We have always had a great board of leaders in the community. Usually they're vice presidents, decision makers, and they're businesses, or we've had the chairman of Rockwell on our board, chairman of PacifiCare at the time. You know, we've had really some pretty amazing philanthropists and business leaders on our board. And so today our organization, because of myself and our team that we have here, the board really is a governing board. It really focuses on generative practices of thinking, our strategic planning, our focus on growth planning and scaling, bringing new hubs of influence and connecting people to our mission. So for the board member that is looking for that hands-on volunteer opportunity to do accounting, this isn't the, this isn't that right. Kind of place. But the person that maybe has availability meetings, we only meet four times a year plus a board retreat, it really is that type of leader that wants to give back with that compassionate heart, but is a driver in their own industry or sector. That's really what we see as the kind of that sweet spot of our board members. It's amazing what they do every day in their everyday world. And but when they come to the wooden floor, they're just completely in love with our mission, our children, making sure that, you know, they're totally focused at the time. And then for volunteer, and we also have term limits. So we look to add usually about four board members every year and a half to make sure we're always looking at new board members. Someone asked recently, like, is there a skill set? And it's just great people. Great yeah. people with a compassionate heart that are leaders in society, yeah. I would say, in the community. And then from volunteers, we actually have a couple volunteer opportunities. We have career day panels. So we have people that like to serve on a panel with one of our students talking about their career in engineering or medical or law, whatever we were doing. Then we also have our events and activities. We have events, the Step Beyond event this April that you heard about, but we also have our Keep the Promise wine tasting benefit at Big Canyon in the fall. And then our annual concert in June, we have people that if they like to help with the kids. And then our last event of the year is Eat and Wrap, where we wrap 475 presents for the children. And we have men and women. We still only have women, but over time we have a lot more men show up bravely. And we wrap gifts in about a half hour. And usually now we have about 90 volunteers. So it's about 3 gifts per person. And then we have a lunch after together, just thanking them. And then we have an alumni speak who comes, you know, we can't have our high school students because it's the middle of the day. So we have an alum come back and talk about what the gift meant to them. You know, from some of our children, I always tell everyone that we do have families that they don't have Christmas presents under their tree. This present that they're getting that the volunteer is wrapping is actually really important because some of the children take it and open it. Some take it and put it under their tree. Some take it and give it to their sibling.
Yeah.
Right? Because they want to give a gift themselves, you know?
Yeah. They want to have that feeling of what it's like to be able to give where they might not otherwise have had that opportunity.
Yes. And I just talked to the chairman of Snyder Langston yesterday or the day before. And they do at least 50, if not more, bicycles a year they donate to our students. For over 25 years, they've done it. The staff at Snyder Langston put together the bicycles. They deliver them with helmets and locks and everything for the children. Mm-hmm. And then we pass those out. And then we also do an annual duck shopping spree with the Anaheim Ducks. Oh, cool. I think it was our 15th year of doing that too. So we have just great corporate partners in the world. Edwards Life Sciences, PIMCO, Capital Group on our board. So, you know, it's just really a great opportunity for everyone to get involved. And, you know, I encourage people, if they hear this, is that, you know, sometimes you have a passion for something else and that's okay. You can always reach me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to, knowing not where this podcast goes, but I'm happy to talk to people about their purpose and where they'd like to give. And hopefully if it's Orange County, I can direct them into maybe something that maybe they're into fish.
Yeah.
Maybe they're into dogs. I don't know, but I can get you to somewhere to navigate you into a top organization and a leader to get involved in.
Well, you're in the right county, Orange County. I love acronyms, and I think of like the acronym ASK, A-S-K, always seek knowledge. Or, yes. You know, I make up stories about acronyms, but one that I like a lot is the OC, which for you is the outstanding connector. and you happen to live and work in Orange County, California, and this goes everywhere. People can listen to this everywhere. We have, you know, we're heard in 110 countries and every state in the union. And, you know, we're not massive, but we do have a big reach. We're not as deep as I'd like it to be in those areas, but we do have viewers and listeners everywhere. How do people you mentioned LinkedIn, what's the best way to get in touch with you? If somebody's listening today and they want to just get involved because they've something that you've shared today touches their heart, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Well, LinkedIn for myself, and then also to connect to the Wooden Floor, I think the best way is our woodenfloor.org and our website. And we also have an info@thewoodenfloor.org too. And then we can, you know, talk to everyone and see how they can make a difference. And like I said, we're happy to, you know, have people over for a tour. We do a lot of tours at 4 o'clock because that feels like the best hour, because then they can either go back to work or go to see their families after. And also, but mainly the children are here. You know, you want to see the building when all the children are here and their classes and their tutoring and their college prep programming that we start in sixth grade. So you want to see the I call it the students and the programs in motion.
Yeah. And I've been there. I think the first time I saw it was a private tour when it was fairly quiet, middle, early in the day. Second time was a graduation or an event of some sort.
Yes.
And another time just, you know, a day in the life, and just the buzz that's there is pretty exciting. I love it. Well, I appreciate you sharing and promoting what you're doing, not just with the Wooden Floor, but just in general. And actually that offer you're making is one that I think a lot of people should take you up on. And that is, if you are looking for a ways to get involved in your community, I've shared this before on this podcast and maybe even Dawn with you, but I've heard pastors and nonprofit leaders and others say, if you're looking to figure out the best place to serve, just ask yourself one question: what breaks my heart?
Yes.
And, you know, children who are not getting that opportunity to get an education or not getting that opportunity to raise their hand in class because they're too, you know, whether it's introversion or whether it's just a history of every time I raise my hand, I get shut down. Why would I keep doing it?
Confidence and courage. Yeah,
exactly. So the fact that you're giving our young people and our future leaders of our country this education and experience is just outstanding. As I mentioned to you before when we started the podcast today, and every guest gets the same question at the end of the podcast, I've recently come up with the idea of taking my first 100 guests, and you're about 82 or 83 now here today, and writing a book. And the idea behind the book is to promote the heart and the cause and the impact of the people that I get a chance to interview. And this has been very impactful for me, and I know for people watching and listening today as well. So the book that I'm going to write or working on is called Speak from the Heart: Lessons from My First 100, or Inspiring Lessons from My First 100 Podcast Guests.
I like that.
And each chapter is going to start with the answer to the question I'm about to ask you. So this will be the beginning of the chapter on Dawn Reese. So I'll just ask you now as we wrap up today, Dawn Reese, what's in your heart?
Wow. Well, I would say that there's a lot of people today in the world suffering and feeling hurt for different reasons. And this is really a time to act differently and think differently about the ways you can help people by being a force for good in the world, because we know there's forces, unfortunately, for bad. And how do you live a life? And that's why people say, well, how do you do so much? Like, because I try to be a force for good in the world. I try to bring that energy to others. And I believe that it's the simple things. It's sending a text, checking in. It's writing a note if you can do, but it's really being intentional and focused that there is a world of people around you that may look very happy. They may sound like they're doing really well. I've been very involved in youth mental health and suicide prevention and awareness. And the number one thing is sometimes people don't tell you what's going on with them. And then unfortunately they may have, you know, suicide or something, and or attempted suicide or suicidal ideation. And so, you know, right now it's just remember that everyone has a story. Everyone has a place that they're coming from in our world. And we want to make sure that we're taking care of people. That's where I've been really focusing. If I had to say, you know, my work here at the Wooden Floor, my work in the community, but what's that keeps me up at night that question people always ask you. It's like, what are we going to do in the future when our children who have struggled today are our leaders, our business leaders, our parents, our community, global citizens of the future? When they're struggling today, what are we doing as a community minimally to help the children? But for all of us, I think we have to really look and take care of those around us that we have an influence in, and to be influencers for good.